This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
I misheard what he said as, is it Stairmaster? Instantly, I pictured a mage in red shorts and blue sweatbands pushing as hard as possible on a Stairmaster to lose that weight. I pictured the huge guys with more than two toughness, intimidating him and pushing him to be better.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI Court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
Anything that costs a shit ton of mana, you're just like, bang! And you're like, fuck.
How does that go?
Bang! Fuck!
Jay Boosh.
And that's like the hyper angle. I never want to play in another GP again. I never want to play in another GP.
Jeremy.
And you're the reason I play Magic today. I'm like, I died. I was like just melting on the inside like that. I have inspired this kid to play Magic.
And Matt.
So I'm having this conversation with this guy in Chile about my deck, and then I'm getting pizza from a guy in Canada. Like, Magic is fucking weird.
And now, the A-Team.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A-Team 293. I am Matt Mendoza, and like my hosts before me, I have to pick up the torch and run it alone for a couple miles. Yep, it's gonna be me solo this week. Jeremy's still on his Portuguese vacation. Jay is on his work crazy hours vacation, and KYT, well, you all know that KYT is never here anyway. So, what? What was that? So, how's it going, KYT?
I am doing great. I mean, I wish Jay was here with us. It was Jared. Was here with us, but sadly Jay had some tragic news, and Jeremy is still in Portugal, so I think he should be back next week. So looking forward to talk to those guys again, but happy to talk with you, because we're the PPTQ grinders of the team right now. So
yeah, apparently
the only person on the cast that I could pick their brain on the format is you, so I'm super glad that out of all of them, you're the one that's here.
So, and just Jay's tragic news, he had just a death in the family, and it's not just a death in the family, but he had a death in the family, and his mother was coming into town, so he is currently on familial duty. Jay is okay, so no need to freak out or anything.
Yeah, I wasn't clear. Thanks for clearing that up.
You never are, KYT. You never are. So, KYT, let's start with your tournament experience. You also did horribly at an event this weekend.
Right. I would say mediocre.
Mediocre. Sure.
it started off with, again, playing this Suicide Zoo deck, but it started again playing at FNM. Just to get some matches in, and because my friend Judge, the guy who judged the PPTQ, William Blondin, has the luxury of owning most of Modern, so he was willing to build me the deck. So shout-outs to him for Friday Night Magic. I decided to play the Jund version, the one that LSV and Raptor played at the Mox, the one I actually talked about last episode with you, the Jund version of Suicide Zoo, and I was like, but it is funny, though. I wonder how much stock to put in these lists, like how much these pros care about the mocks. I think they should, but you know, there's other people that like, they don't give a shit, they just want to fuck around. So I actually don't really know. I think I'll ask one of these guys one day, but I decided to try it, And
so go ahead, but I have I have a comment about pros commentary on Modern.
So I went 4-0 with the deck, and it felt pretty solid. Some inconsistencies when it comes to it is actually still hard. This is pretty all in on Delirium. You're playing four traverses to make it so that you're consistent in terms of getting your Death Shadow, but like hitting Delirium early is kind of hard, and it is frustrating also that you have, again, the problem with this deck and a lot of decks that rely on too many cyclers in Cataxian Probe and Street Wraith is that some of your opening hands, you really don't know if they're good, and typically some of them aren't without that known information that you need. But then when it comes to needing to hit Delirium, you might actually want to keep, like, mulliganing is shittier because that extra card might be that sorcery in Probe, might be that creature, Street Wraith, might be that fetch land, might be that Mishra's Bauble, that artifact. Like, you're like looking at it, oh man, it's a bunch of shitty cyclers in your seven or six, but then you look at it and it's like, well, this also has three different card types, so I'm getting really close to Delirium with this type of hand. So I've had, and of course, you just come to a conclusion that a lot of these synergistic decks, synergy decks, are the ones that get hurt the most when they mulligan because they need those cards. But this is a type of deck where you have a lot of hands at seven where you don't know if you should keep or not because there are just a bunch of cyclers. So that is frustrating, Matt. And but I went 4-0. Obviously, it's FNM. Okay. I'm not playing against the best competition at FNM.
Mm-hmm.
Still. And but it's so not for the
something, you're getting your reps in and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm getting my reps in. And fast forward to PPTQ. I'm playing the list, feeling pretty good. My first opponent is Black-White Eldrazi, and I think it's one of the not-so-popular versions of it compared to the Bat one. I went to Game 3, but he was smart enough, I guess. It felt smart when he played it. Relic of Progenitus against me. And at the time, I was feeling really good about my hand until I realized that I had two traverses in my hand. And with Relic...
Oh, no.
If he doesn't pop it randomly, desperately pop it, my traverses are just tap one, search for a basic land. They essentially become garbage cards. So I didn't expect that. I didn't expect to be blown out by that. But like Relic is obvious, has traditionally been really good against Goyf decks, etc. At just rendering Goyfs to just a 0/1. So I lost to that, and then went on to 0/2. I don't really remember off the top of my head now. I'm not going to go through all the rounds. But yeah, a lot of the frustration with the deck came with all the issues that I mentioned. A lot of the inconsistencies, and then a lot of the people that were able to bring in specific graveyard type hate can really hurt you. And Relic is an absolute all-star against this deck because you're relying on Delirium so much for traverses to be good. And for your dryads to be relevant, like if they're just 1/1s, you're not putting much of a clock and you're over reliant on your Death Shadow to do a lot of work. So I just remember losing my last round against Scapeshift, but that's because he did the whole where I discarded his Scapeshift from his hand, but he was able to like runner Cryptic Command into Bring to Light. So, you know, that happens a lot. That deck is one of the most infuriating to play against when it comes to the run bad, just because they can typically do that. They have a lot of Scapeshifts or bring to Light, and then obviously their Cryptic Command usually against your creature based deck buys them like a full turn to draw yet again, and then they can like maybe draw an Izzet Charm and then discard and get to their answer. So you know, I've lost to that deck before, and I capped it off. Capped it off with a 3-3 record. I'm not going to play this deck for the WMCQ just because, with all the issues I mentioned. But when I got to play a Death Shadow turn one in the tournament, so when it gets going, it's really good. And, but like, you can say that about a lot of decks. Maybe at the end of the day, this is still a really good deck. But I will be trying Grimflayer Jund next, if I get the chance to do so. And the reason I'm doing so is I didn't know this, Matt, at the time when I talked about the deck, but the guy who won the mocks, it was Jacob Wilson's, one of his other accounts. So I had no idea it was him. He usually goes by 85 Fum. So the Grimflayer Jund deck was actually, according to Alex Hain, my buddy, tells me that it was designed by him. So there's a lot more stock. It's not just a funky Grimflayer deck that plays a lot of one, random one-offs to hit Delirium. It's actually made by a notable pro. So maybe there's a lot more stock into that list.
So hindsight's 2020, but like, kind of feel like this turn that Suicide Zoo took into Jund is actually the exact wrong way I would go with the deck. And not because of the whole mulliganing problems. I mean, that's besides the point. I mean, each deck has its own problems, whereas you play the Jund version because your mana is a little bit more consistent, but you have to but your mulligans are a little bit more painful. But you play the Suicide Zoo, the four color, or is it five color?
I think no, it's four color, I would say.
Okay, you play the four color version because it's a little bit more explosive because you get step links and stuff.
Right.
But I'm really surprised that they went in the direction where everybody's gunning to beat Dredge. I mean, Dredge is like the next you know, Dredge is like the level one of the format where Dredge is the deck that's on everybody's mind. So every deck is going to have something to address the graveyard, if not also Anger of the Gods. And when your creatures, when you can't really save your creatures from an Anger, and Anger is like the least of that deck's problems. It's more like the fact that if you don't have Delirium or if you don't have access to your graveyard, your deck's just kind of bad.
Right.
But I'm really surprised that that's the direction that they took with that deck. And would you play four color Suicide Zoo still?
No, I think they both have the similar issues. Like talk about like it exchange explosiveness. Getting like Traverses felt really good just because they were just always good, and having more Death Shadow was great. Having to not rely on a Become a Mance necessarily, just playing more of that, you become like a Death Shadow deck, like super concentrated on getting that card into play. You do lose out on the random wins where you have Battle Rage and Become a Mance in your hand. You do lose out on Steplinks being an explosive card. I just wouldn't play right now. I'm pretty down on both, and I don't think that it came down to me miscyborging, or it came down to me making mistakes. Like, I don't regret too much any of my plays that would have changed anything. So, but the cyborg was a lot better in the newer version, despite playing less colors, because the previous version only like played a random Lightning Helix, but this one actually played cards that I liked. It played Spellskite. It played Flame Slashes. I was complaining to you about how I thought Bant Eldrazi looked amazing. And then I'm like, well, this sideboard has three Flame Slash, which is the best, well, one of the best cards that you want when someone drops a Thought Knot Seer, and it's one of the cards that you want to draw the most. So I had that, and it had one, like the Spellskite I mentioned, it had one copy of Spellskite, one copy of Malira, and Grim Lavamancers for the Infect matchup. But then you're like, why does it play one Malira, one Spellskite? It's so random. But then you're like, oh, wait, you can actually get Malira, that one copy, with Traverse. So it's like, you could sort of play one Spellskite, one Malira, get away with that, because you sort of have this tutor for them. So I'm like, yeah, that's kind of cute and probably relevant in a lot of ways, especially in that Infect matchup, if I can just jam it in, because typically they don't have that many answers to a creature, and they might bring, like, in a lot of cases, they might bring some amount of Dismember against you, but Dismember isn't great against a Zoo deck, so you don't hate the fact that they're spending four life to kill your Malira. So they both had their virtues, and I just think I'm just going to step away from this archetype altogether. I know it was played to some amount at the Invitational. I didn't check the SCG results too closely. I know I heard Brad Nelson played it, so you know, it's still got its advocates. The archetype so has its team of players that are supporting the archetype, but I'm moving on. I'm moving on to Jund and trying different things. And hey, if my friend has the cards, maybe okay. give Blood Besties a try. I mean, I never trusted you. I thought I was always excited by the prospect of destroying some land. So maybe, but definitely moving off the Suicide Zoo trail.
Yeah.
So enough about my horrible performance despite an awesome FNM. How did you do, buddy?
Not great myself. So I was very frustrated with by my performance. So there were some matchups. Basically, I played two PPTQs this weekend, and I discovered that, so funny coincidence between the PPTQ that I almost won last weekend and then the two PPTQs this weekend, in all three events, I did not have to play the last round of the Swiss.
Oh.
Now, because of that I was winning and because I was going into in first place, the last PPTQ, I didn't have to play because I drew. And then the other two PPTQs, I did so bad that I got a bye and then a no-show opponent my last rounds. So that was fun.
What?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it was, this week was just a frustrating string of not mulliganing correctly and then not sideboarding correctly against a couple different decks where my PPTQ on Sunday, I played the eventual winner. I lost to this guy named Barry, a super great guy. He always comes to the PPTQs that I go to at this specific store with a brew that he is out of left field. So sometimes he plays, like the first time we played, was playing Mardu. The next time we played, he was playing Scred Red. And then this week he brought a mono white humans deck. So he was playing Champion, Thalia's Lieutenant, Thalia, stuff like that. Basically go big and go wide. One of his key cards of the whole thing was Knight of the Holy Nimbus, which he said was surprisingly very good for him. It is, if you don't remember, it is the 2/2 for 2 white. That has flanking, and then if it would die, regenerate it, okay? And then it says pay 2 colorless. Any player may stop Knight of the Holy Nimbus from regenerating this turn. So it's basically just a very, like, for the sweepers and stuff in the format, it basically made your sweeper cost 5 if you wanted to, like Anger of the Gods, for example, costs 5 if you wanted to kill Knight. So he went super wide, and then the problem with that matchup was I didn't see enough of his deck to really figure out how to sideboard. Because Ponza sideboards a couple different ways depending on how the aggressive decks present their strategy. So for example, against the smaller aggressive decks, Sudden Shot comes in, and not as many sweepers come in, but against the bigger aggressive decks, we don't bother with Sudden Shock because they're not very good. They get outclassed very quickly, but we bring in more sweepers. And then we actually, like, for example, against Fish and Zoo or Fish and Merfolk, we don't bring in Kitchen Finks because they don't really block anything. And his deck was playing Brave the Elements. And then what I found out was Abzan Falconer, which is the limited all-star that gives all your creatures with +1/+1 counters flying. So he basically just was able to fly over my team or Brave the Elements to make his team unblockable, or whatever. So I wasn't sure exactly how to sideboard, and I lost round one. And then I lost to round two. I played against my friend Steven, who basically I spent the whole weekend with. My friend Steven and Jacob and I, we basically spent the whole weekend together. And I had played him on Saturday as well, and beat him playing Jund. So whenever he sits down across from me, playing one of his Abzan or Jund decks, he's always like, oh man, because it does not go well for him usually. But for whatever reason, he was able to pull out a win against me on Sunday to put me immediately into the O2 bracket going into that Sunday's PTQ. So, and then from there, you know, I picked up a win here and then a loss and then whatever. More importantly, though, we learned a lot about the deck and about how about some of the cards in it. So one of the things that we're changing, for example, is Scavenging Ooze. I kept at one point I had a turn two Scavenging Ooze against Eggs, which, yes, I played against a person playing Eggs who, you know, and we were in the like 1-2 bracket or 1-3 bracket.
This deck still exists.
Yeah. So I played him and I went turn two Ooze. Go, and then I just kept up green mana up the whole time, and then he just went off anyway and just overloaded me. And it just, the graveyard decks, if they're dredge, they, you know, like dredge, for example, Scooze is not good against some of the more creature heavy decks. Scooze is a fine threat if you, for example, if you play it and then are able to immediately exile like three things to make it a 5/5 or a 6/6 and have it gain some life, because it basically stabilizes you against the burn decks. For example, the problem is that it's just we can't reliably draw it in Ponza because we have Primal Command and then we have one Scooze. It's always like either too early, because you can't play it on turn two again in a lot of matchups, because we're either doing something more important at three mana or it's just going to die. So we were just like, oh, why do we have Scooze in our deck anymore? So we're cutting Scooze.
Okay.
And we're kind of just conceding to some of the more the graveyard decks. You could say that Scooze gives you a little bit of value against Snapcaster Mage or Culligan's Command or cards like that. The problem is that those decks just kill Scooze so easily. If you don't have a bunch of other creatures to make it bigger. So basically it comes down, it maybe will gain one or two life. It may eat like a thing or two and then it just dies. And we just wanted something. We want more out of our cards. So we're cutting Scooze. And then Thrun keeps disappointing me. There are no blue decks in this format outside of Jeskai and like the occasional Jeskai deck and the occasional Grixis deck. There's just no blue decks. So back when we added Thrun to the deck, there was a ton of blue decks, and they're just non-existent anymore. So I like Thrun against Jund, kind of, but basically what we kept happening was like we would play Thrun, and then they would have a Goyf, and Thrun couldn't attack, and Goyf could attack and force us to block and tap two mana. Which is an important function sometimes, but we're not winning the game. Like, that's not a winning strategy.
Right.
So we're basically going to switch to two Chameleon Colossus as opposed to one. We switched to that last week and one in the sideboard. So we had one in the sideboard for both PPTQs, and Chameleon Colossus is very good. We loved it. You played against Jund, and then they can't do anything about it. Outside of Liliana, and then occasionally Damnation, if they play it, it just sticks. And then they can attack into it with their Goyf, but then we can pump, and we have to watch out for like the combat damage plus bolt lines that they present. But other than that, Chameleon Colossus is just phenomenal. So we're going to two of those, and we're cutting one of the Baloth. So we're doing a two Baloth, two Chameleon Colossus, one Thrun split for the GP in terms of our four mana, 4/4s.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, and then we're going to a 22nd land as opposed to the Scavenging Ooze, because there were just so many times where the attrition-y decks, like Jund and Abzan, and even some of the aggressive decks, they kill our dorks And then we're reliant on drawing lands to play our spells on time.
Okay.
And it's just a harder life out there for Arbor Elves and Birds of Paradise. And even Utopia Sprawls, because tons of decks play Abrupt Decay now. Between Dredge and between Dredge and Jund / Abzan, Abrupt Decay is more common than what it used to be. So we're just having to deal with that reality of needing to draw more lands so that we can stay on schedule. So one card that got a lot of discussion internally was Outpost Siege. I know that Corbin Hostler, whenever he built and played the deck, he liked it enough that he put one in the main and one on the sideboard. I'm still not convinced that it's where I want to be. Against a lot of decks, you draw it and it literally does nothing. Because in a deck where you literally need your cards to do something when you cast them, because a lot of times, like, you only have access to the one card you draw per turn. And I think I would rather play a Harmonize than an Outpost Siege. Most of the time.
Okay.
So, but we're basically on the conclusion that two Chameleon Colossus and Primal Command is where we want to be versus Jund, as opposed to adding something like a Harmonize or an Outpost Siege. So it was a weekend of hanging out with friends, learning some stuff about my deck and the format, playing a lot of Mortal Kombat 3 and Mega Man X on the SNES, which was super fun.
That's awesome.
Shout out to my friend Jacob, who is, try as he might, very bad at Mortal Kombat. He was the one that was looking up all the moves, and then he would just lose horribly. So it was great.
I'm not good at that game myself. So I used to play it as a kid a lot. Sub-Zero for the win.
Oh, yeah, yes. I love Sub-Zero. And he gets better in Mortal Kombat 3, too, because you get the Ice Clone, and then you get the if they're in front of you, you can shoot the Ice Sheet and have them fall into you, like slip into you. So it was pretty sweet.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like your reasoning overall about Colossus over those two. Especially if Jund is the main reason, because out of those cards, Colossus is the best one.
Yeah, I mean, I keep wanting Obstinate Baloth to be better than it is in that matchup. But honestly, if they Thought Seize you or Inquisition you, and they see Baloth, there is no way in hell that they're playing Liliana and plussing it if you have a Baloth in hand.
Okay.
Like, it's just not happening. And I have, like, for example, I think I've discarded Liliana or discarded Baloth for its ability 3 times playing the deck. Total. 3 times. And one of those times I actually lost because he just Culligan's commanded me and I discarded Baloth and then he killed it and then attacked me. So I'm not convinced it's great against the aggressive decks for sure, but I'm not convinced it's good. It's exceptional against the attrition-y kind of decks like Jund. So I did also this weekend, it was a little frustrating because two of us were playing Ponza at the Saturday PTQ. And then 3 of us were playing Ponza Sunday at the PTQ. And Saturday, me and my friend Alan, who is a new convert to the deck, had to play each other, and he won. Which was, you know, it was frustrating, whatever, but I'm glad that he's on the deck. But neither of us had a good showing. So I went into Sunday, I'm like, all right, you know, doubting whether or not this deck is good or whatever. And then Alan and I, also the same story. We did not have a good showing, but there was a saving grace in that Michael, Bloodbestie, co-architect of the deck, who also top aided last Saturday's PPTQ, won, got to the finals of the this week's PPTQ of the
Really?
Yeah. So
wow.
The finals were super weird at this PPTQ because they were White Weenie versus Ponza. You're never going to find that anywhere else. So it came down to a really tense game three, where unfortunately fatigue set in and Michael kept a six card hand that was not very good and ended up losing game three because of it. But it was, the match was super close. He, in this hilarious, quarterfinals or semifinals match, Michael's only line game three versus Jund was to attack and put his opponent to one, but his opponent had a bob in play. So his out was the bob flip. And guess which card killed that guy, the Jund player. It's super appropriate.
It's got like a discard spell?
Lightning Bolt.
Okay.
He flipped Lightning Bolt, took the one damage, and died. And Michael won the semifinals. It was really cool. Who also is a Kyrel. He's a local player. He's playing John, super good guy. But yeah, so it was a good weekend for Ponza. I mean, outside of like me and Alan's poor performances, and I think he did slightly better than me on average, but I basically can identify all the errors that I made for the most part. And in like misevaluating my hands and things like that. So I'm just, it was a learning experience this week, as opposed to an ungodly run of insane luck. Coming out of this weekend, I was really worried, because I'm like, maybe the metagame is just not where Ponza should be. Like, what if it's just hostile to Ponza? Maybe like these Jund and Abzan decks are just too popular, which we have a pretty good matchup against them for the most part. And we just occasionally run into these weekends where the Jund players are just run hot or whatever. But I was comforted by looking at all of the other PPTQ results from in the area, and then looking at the invitational lists. And I'm just like, all right, it's fine. Life is good. Abzan Coco is still in the format. Jund and Infect is still in the format. Affinity is still in the format. All of these decks that I have lots of experience against, and that I know that Ponza can be very solid against, I'm good. I'm good. I'm very confident.
I still feel the same way as you when it comes to the metagame. I think it's just super spread out. And even like you're talking about the invitation, if you look at the top eight, it's eight different decks. Elves ended up winning the invitational, the modern, at least. And it ended up winning my PPTQ in first place. And sometimes we're seeing a lot of this stuff that I don't expect. Well, like you just mentioned, Ponds against White Weenie. We're seeing Dredge, and I'm seeing Elves. Dredge wasn't the only deck that has been Now that it seems less random, now that we're seeing more and more. But at the time, it just seemed like Dredge was randomly doing well, and Elves was always in a lot of top eights that I've seen, and me going, well, I don't get it, because Elves was never considered a tier one deck, and here it wins the invitational here. It won my local PPTQ, and you know, the format is still just like super, super, super spread out. And when it comes to the GP or the WMCQ that I'm going to be playing at, you know, like before, I used to be able to count on knowing that Affinity would be in double digits now, in percentage wise, but now it's just like I'm not sure of anything,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
And even in my PPTQ, I'm playing against Black White Eldrazi, Bring to Light Scape Shift, which may or may not be the most popular version of that deck. I play against a green white, aggro deck with Voice of Resurgence and stuff like that. I beat that handily, but we're talking about completely different decks all the time. Yeah. So I wouldn't worry if you feel your deck is pretty solid overall.
Yeah, I actually feel much better about my deck in a wider field. Actually, I feel better going into the GP than I do these PPTQs, mostly because these PPTQs are filled with players who know how to play against my deck, who my deck doesn't surprise them.
Okay, yeah.
It still does. It still does some players. I still get the people who are like, I have no idea what you're doing, dude, or whatever. But when it sits down, you know, when two tournaments in a row, I sit down across from the friend who I drove to the event with, you know, I mean, that's just, you're not going to have that at a GP for the most part.
Right. I agree with that.
And there's going to be people familiar with my deck, but they're not going to be as intimately familiar as the other grinders in my area. So I get some percentage points there. Plus, I just imagine more, just a wider variety of tier one decks at the GP than you see at a local PPTQ or something like that. So, I feel like I'm excited about Indy because I feel like I have a better chance there.
You should be. I'd be confident. I'd lay on some money that you would day two if I was feeling gambly, but. In a gambling mood, but I'm pretty confident that you'll do well. And again, I've said this before, I always feel there's this sense of happiness in me when I feel like you're at this point where even if you've played like thousands of games with this deck, you're still finding these like ways of improving it. Whereas for me, like a lot of the archetypes, I felt like I took it to almost like the final level. Whereas like whether it be Boggles or my bug infected at the PT, even post PT, I would feel like, oh man, I think I maxed out on the tweaks I could do with it. But here you're just like, you've been on this deck for a while, you've had success, and you're still finding like Chameleon Colossus, you're still finding innovation. So that's really exciting to me, and I think I'm excited to see how you'll do in Indy.
Yeah. One thing I realized, speaking of revelations that you think about when just new things that come to light. One of the things that happens against Abzan Coco sometimes is that they can go off and then gain infinite life. But then usually the next turn is when I just bonfire them out of the game, or I play my Titan or whatever, because that's usually the point where that happens. And then I was like, okay, so we get into these situations where they have infinite life, but I have ways to basically keep them up, like to Emrakul them, you know, where basically Inferno Titan can just come in and just kill everything that they play. And then I can destroy their lands and play Blood Moon to keep them off of playing anything. And then I'm like, okay, so I got to rely on decking them. I hope that happens. And then I realized Primal Command has a mode where it shuffles a player's library into a graveyard. So I have a Gaia's Blessing in case I need to, in case I get into that situation with Absam Coco. I'm like, yeah. So, you know, it's those little things that you realize after, you know, sitting with a deck and playing it a whole bunch of times and all that.
Yeah, I definitely, yeah, I feel you. And that's why I'm so confident in you.
Oh, thanks, KYT.
I think you can do it. And I'm looking forward to trying out, Grimflayer Jund and letting people know what I think about it. And again, people keep like saying, do you still get that where people think like people watching you or like the joke that you might be playing a bad deck? You get that?
I mean, mostly from my salty opponents.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know if I get that much anymore just because of where I'm at and everybody knows me or has seen the, you know, whatever. I still get the, like, I'm excited to go to Indy because I know there will be people that will walk by my table while I'm playing and they'll be like, Stormbreath Dragon, Inferno Titan. Right.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God. He just cast a Stone Rain. Oh my God. So which excites me. I like that my deck is entertaining to people who don't know what I'm doing, or haven't seen it in the wild before. But I don't get that anymore. Only because I just either that or I'm just not paying attention. I do think that some of the spiker, more spiky grinders in the area probably think that. I know that I was playing against somebody and they were playing elves one time and we were just playing a casual game, and then his friends were like around and they were kind of chuckling at my plays and stuff, and they're like, the elves opponent started to do their thing, and I'm like, oh, just a second. And then I Beast Within just his Azuri, and that one play was enough to win me the game. And it's just like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. I'm not above making mistakes, but I know what I'm doing.
Sounds good. Outside of that, there's Conspiracy Take the Crown coming out this upcoming week, well, Friday. I'm typically not the too competitively driven usually to be too excited about a set like this, but I played the first version quite a bit, had some fun with some friends. I actually am grateful for all the friends that decided to buy a box and for the good of the group just wanted people to play it. Mm-hmm. Because you get to play it as it was intended to be played, you're gonna have to spend a lot of cash or have a lot of friends that want to pitch in for you. And I'm not sure what the overall people think about the set overall. I know some people think it sucks. Then Berserk was revealed and some exciting cards were revealed and people were on the excited train. And I think the sales for this, at least from a face-to-face game standpoint, are pretty good. So I think in general, overall, at the end of the day, people are excited for this set. So I'll probably get maybe a game or two in with people who decide to buy a box, or I'll chip in a box just to be able to enjoy it. What about yourself?
I am excited about Conspiracy 2, although it's a bit of a challenge. Because what I think about Conspiracy, what I thought about the first Conspiracy applies to most of the group games of Magic that I play, is that you have to be playing with people of the same type of player that you are. Whereas if you're playing with like a super casual player, but they're the only one that at the table that isn't a spike, the dynamic is really weird. And they're probably not going to have fun, and you're going to have less fun.
Right, right.
But if you play where you're just like, all right, everybody's making the right plays, and everybody's being aggressive and not just sitting back and going, oh, I could attack this person who has no creatures, and there's like no risk of retribution, but what if he has something? I'm just not going to attack with my creature. You know, if you're constantly playing with players like that, then it's just not fun. But if you're playing with players of the same mindset and of the same skill level, for the most part, I think that that's a lot of fun. One of the things that I love about Conspiracy is Conspiracy's juicing up the cards that I play. So one of my favorite Conspiracy decks was my three copies of Courier Hawk that were actually one mana Lightning Angels.
Yeah, I remember that.
Deck, which was really fun. Like, that's fun. That's fun Magic. So I am excited about it. And the value is there. It's really great that it's retailing at $350, you know, $350 or $3, $4 a pack, whatever it is. There's an unlimited print run. It's just a normal set. And then there's tons of great tournament staples. I know that I'm a little bit less excited about the tournament staples than other people would be because I love original printings. So to me, having an Inquisition of Kozilek from Conspiracy is not the same as having an Inquisition of Kozilek from Rise of Eldrazi.
Right, right.
But it's exciting that you can open a Berserk or a Show and Tell and be one card closer to a Legacy deck.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's really cool. And then, yeah, it's just the casual appeal. I know that I'm going to get texts from friends at, you know, late nights at events that are be like, hey, we're going to do a conspiracy draft. You want to join us? Yeah. Yeah, I want to.
Yeah, you're giving me memories, flashbacks of, because you talk about your archetype with the curry hog, and you're making me think of the first archetype people started, at least in my local playgroup, which was the Defender deck.
Yeah.
With the, and then when that one guy starts to set that shit up, he's just going to die when people know what's up. Yeah. So that was funny.
Well, and then I had the deck that had a Hidetsugu in it. I think the guy that halves everybody's lineup. But he cost four and he had haste. So that was awesome.
Yeah, I remember. I'm likely going to have fun with the set yet again. Matt, have you checked the comments? Did you look at any of the entries for your contest?
Yeah. So let's do the, I guess we'll transition to the contest. So we got four comments. I will go from top to bottom just because they are in order of shortest to longest. And spoiler alert, not worst to best, but first, second, third, and best. The best is the last. So so Paul Wickham commented, the best mispronunciation I've heard is Kitchen Finks as Fitchin' Kinks. So I believe I'm going to call you on this, Paul, and that I think it was, I would imagine that was an intentional mispronunciation, but I would be tickled if it was not. And, but I've heard it before. So, I'm sorry, Paul. Cedric LeBlanc said, I heard someone mispronounce Mercadian Masks as Mercadian Masquis. Hard to write down how he pronounced it, but it sounded awful. Yeah, those hard Q's and C's unaccompanied by other whatever. Yeah, that's awesome. Mercadian Masquis. But I mean, Masques would be a weird word if you never heard it pronounced. If you never saw Jacques, you know, Jacques, for example, the French name.
Right.
So that makes sense. Andre, oh my God, I'm going to totally butcher his last name. Desjardins?
Desjardins.
Okay. I'm not sure if this counts as mispronouncing or just horrible reading / things on the mind. He says, well, I am famous for mispronouncing cards. The best one I've heard was from my Blair Murray Clark, who pronounced deep water hypnotist as deep throat hypnotist. And he says, the best mishearing I've ever heard was my friend Blair talking to me and my other friend Brad when he said, not only that the cards will last longer, to which Brad replied, did you just call me a cardinal assmonger? I like cardinal assmonger, but not a mispronunciation of the card spirit monger. So sorry about that, Andre. And then Doug Potter. He did not disappoint.
Nope.
Okay, my favorite of all time is a bit twofold. Step one, I am playing a match and an opponent said, is it Staircaster? Now, yes, this is a mistake. And clearly he didn't get the static of the name. But that isn't what made it so funny to me. The reason I died laughing is myself. Step two, I misheard what he said as, is it Stairmaster? Instantly, I pictured a mage in red shorts and blue sweatbands pushing as hard as possible on a Stairmaster to lose that weight. I pictured the huge guys with more than two toughness, intimidating him and pushing him to be better. Small sons, the guys with one toughness, bow down to the is it Stairmaster as he slays them. He also adds, mispronounce to miss here equals my favorite of all time. Doug, you are our winner this week. Send me your address to mattjmendoza@gmail.com, and I will, or just Facebook it. You can just Facebook at me as well. Just make sure if you send me an email to put A-Team Contest in the subject line and the title of the email so I can easily find those when I do my mailings. And I'll send you something nice.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah, yeah. So our contest this week has a special guest. And ooh. I'm going to go get them real quick.
Sounds good.
All right. So would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Lauren Mendoza. Matt's wife of, what is it, 2 weeks now?
Yeah,
3 weeks?
Yeah. So I wanted to have her on for this specific contest because last night, my friend Jacob, Steven, and Jacob's wife, Melissa, sat around after the dinner. And out of that dinner came one of the most fun Magic games I've played in a long time. There are a lot of Magic guessing games, but this one was awesome and is especially more awesome with playing with somebody who has no idea mostly about anything to do with Magic. So what I'm going to have Lauren do, and we're going to start with an Eldritch Moon pack. Now, I have not looked at the cards. I'm going to have her read off two uncommons and a rare. So I need you to pick the two of the silver ones. See the little symbol right here? Okay. Two silver ones and a gold one. And then what? So you'll need to find the one with the gold symbol on it. Don't show me. And basically, so how we're going to do it with two uncommons and a rare just to kind of introduce the game. And then what I'm going to do is, so what she's going to do is describe the art of the pick of on the card.
Oh.
And then we have to guess what card it is. And if we don't guess it, we don't get it. That's how the game works. So, and then, so we're going to do two uncommons and a rare from Eldritch Moon. And then for this week's contest, we're going to do a random card from magiccards.info. So,
silvers and a gold.
Two silvers and a gold.
Wait, we're doing these three?
We're doing these three.
Man, I'm never going to get this.
Well, neither am I. So, you know, I mean, whatever.
Should I tell you whether it's silver or gold?
No.
Okay.
So, KYT, can you hear okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right. So, I have not seen these cards. KYT, obviously, you don't know what these cards are. Now, she's going to describe the art, and our job, and your job at home, is to guess the card.
Okay, so in this first card... Don't look.
I'm not looking. You just got to put them, tilt them up a little bit so I can't.
In this first card, there's a gentleman in like a cape or a cloak. He's got a glowing hand, which is outstretched toward some sort of swirly, perhaps tentacled creature. Yeah. It's swirly. It looks like a tree trunk, sort of.
Okay.
That's the creature or whatever this thing is reaching to. So that's the first one. Are you guys going to guess before I move
okay.
on?
Okay, KYT, do you have any idea?
Is this a silver one or a gold one?
We don't know. It could be a rare, it could be an uncommon.
Okay, I think I have a good guess.
Okay, what's your guess?
Let everybody
5 seconds for everybody at home. You can pause if you think you got it. One, two.
I don't think I have it, but.
Well, I definitely have it.
You definitely don't have it?
No, absolutely not.
And it's from Eldritch Moon, right?
Correct.
Actually, there could be.
Okay.
Summary Dismissal.
Nope.
Nah.
That's my guess. I'm wrong.
Oh, man. I have to tap out. I don't know what it is. KWT, do you have any other guesses?
It's not. It's definitely not a common, right? You said
correct,
Matt. Like, okay, so I tap out as well.
What?
Don't know what it is.
It's unsubstantiate. Unsubstantiate.
Yeah.
Oh. Damn.
Okay. So next card number two.
Okay.
Do the silver one, just so that we can do the two silver ones and the gold one.
Okay. So this next one, there's like a like an orc-like creature with wings, and he's in the air. He's got like a gnarly sword with like a crazy pointy blade, and he's flying over like the ruins of something. We've got some like stones that are falling over.
Okay. So flying orc type thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're the art guy.
I have literally drafted this set once. So the uncommons are like extra hard for me because I haven't like seen most of them.
Some spiky wristbands and perhaps some sort of crown as well.
Okay. Oh man.
Oh, it's got it. It's like a red or black card, right?
I would imagine, yeah.
Or artifact or gold card. Damn.
Red, oh, I have no idea. I'm so bad at this game. KYT, any guesses?
He's jumping in the air?
No, he's suspended in midair as though he were in flight.
Man, this guy's flying? I'm going to have to give up. I give up.
Yeah.
We've got a advanced stitch wing.
Okay.
Crowd favorite advanced stitch wing.
Oh, it's blue, actually.
Oh.
It's the one that you, the 3/4 with flying that
expect
two cards to return to the battlefield.
Okay, I see it.
Yeah. Okay, and our rare. Hopefully this one will be easier.
So we've got a real creepy looking house. The windows are all aglow. There's a person standing in a window. Jeez, the roofs are all real pointy.
Okay.
This card is kind of shimmery, so it's hard to make up the details, actually.
Oh, that's good. It's a foil rare.
Yeah, so the windows are aglow, and we've got kind of a spiderweb-like appearance across the windows.
What?
Could be stained glass.
Okay. What are the lands in this set, KYT? Do you remember the rare lands?
I just remember one of them.
What is that?
Actually, there's two of them. There's the there's the battlements, and there's the Gyre Reach Sanitarium, which is the loot. The looting one. Each player draws a card and discards a card.
Is that it? Gyre Reach Sanitarium?
Yes.
All right, we got one, cool. KYT. Hell yeah. Okay, so hard mode. For the you listeners at home, guess in the comments what you think this card is. So, Lauren, take it away. You just described that card.
You're good. Everybody's so we've listening. Got a, like, Independence Day style alien kind of creature. He's got a lot of arms. Six arms, it looks like. And he's wearing armor, but the rest of him has kind of like a tree root like appearance. And he's kind of crouched in a menacing way. In a like forest, I guess, is where we are.
Yeah, look, yeah. It's a dark forest, I would say.
Yeah, alien like guy in some armor. He's got a lot of arms, and what's now covered by armor looks like a tree root, we'll say, or tree branch even. And he's in some sort of gloomy forest. Could be misty.
Yeah, looks a little misty.
I think I see some spider webs.
Okay. Anything, any other detail you could clue them in on?
I don't know what I'm missing.
You're not missing anything. I just wanted to, they have to guess.
I think this is good.
Six hands. The fingers are kind of gnarled, like witch fingers. Like Wicked Witch of the West fingers.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
I like that.
Well, thank you very much, Lauren. What's it like being married to a magic player?
It's great. I get a lot of weekends to myself. I can always tell when he's talking magic over the phone because I only understand a third of what's going on. But I'm picking up on some of the lingo, and I've made some friends at work and elsewhere because of the game. So always interesting describing to people where my boyfriend, fiance, husband is over the weekend. So yeah, it's good.
Okay, cool. Right. Well, thank you very much.
Good night, everybody.
That was an awesome idea, Matt.
I'm always good for a contest or two.
I love it. I love it. That was awesome.
Cool. Yeah, it was an awesome game. I am so looking forward to playing this on my way to Indy.
I got to draft or seal this format a lot more.
Just stare at the art, bitch. Right?
Right. I mean, I think she described it, and even, like, there are still a bunch of cards that could fall under that description that she gave. So hopefully we still get a mixture of answers as I'm looking at the spoiler now to try to figure it out. But that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. Oh, this card is Gatherer Random. It's not from.
Oh.
It's not from. It's not necessarily from Eldritch Moon.
Right. I forgot about that specific detail. Even though Eldritch Moon obviously has a lot of green cards that can fall under that, but I love that.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was my week in Magic. KYT, do you have anything else to?
No. I'll probably be jamming some games and talk to you guys next week on my Grim Flare Jun experiences.
Yeah. And I'll we'll have GP Indie reports. Oh my god, I'm so excited. Cuz the first major event I played this deck in, I didn't have that many paper reps. I had a lot of Magic Online reps, but I hadn't played in paper Magic tournaments in a long time. So it was basically I lost some games and matches simply because of that fact.
All right. So. I'm looking, keep me posted during the week.
Oh, I will.
So and for that, we'll see you guys next week, and hopefully we'll be full strength next week. So talk to you guys later.
Bye.